It's episode 16 of the WP HackerCast, and today I'm talking with Corey Moss. Corey is an experienced web developer, app maker, plugin builder, and musician. Over the course of his career, he has built a host of plugins and apps under his Gelform banner, but the most popular of those is the Kanban WP plugin for WordPress. Corey and I were having such a great chat that we ended up having to cut our interview short. So this is going to be part one of a two-part interview with Corey. In part one, we talk about his music and web developer history, how he came up with the idea for Kanban WP, and we discussed how he is in the process of rewriting the plugin and why he made this choice. Please enjoy part one of my interview with Corey Moss. Right, Corey, how are you doing today?
Very well, thank you. And yourself?
I am very well, thank you. I am towards the end of my day here in Cape Town, but I believe you're just starting your day.
Yep, bright and early, and in fact started with construction outside the window.
That's always a
good way to start the day, but tucked in here in the basement doing
great.
An impromptu recording session. So hopefully you can't hear the 3D printer through the wall. that's the other, you know, in my house you can't escape sound. We also have three dogs, which my wife is nice enough to lock in a closet upstairs with her at the moment. So hopefully we get a good clear audio signal.
No, it sounds great. I'm fairly lucky. I used to work from home, but now I've managed to arrange an away office, which is 5 minutes away, so I can get out and I can get some peace. Although sometimes when I'm recording my podcast, I'll have the gardener at the house next door going around with a leaf blower, and that can get in the way. But anyway, so for the folks who don't know who you are, maybe if you could just give us a very quick introduction as to yourself. Who you are, what you do, and where in the country you're talking to us from today.
Sure. So I'm currently in a little town called Saugerties, New York. It's about 2 hours north of New York City. I grew up in the Northeast, and so this feels like home, even though it's a few hours away. Before this, a few years in Nashville. Before that, a decade in New York City. So I've moved around a fair bit. But New York City was by far and away, obviously, an amazing experience. In a former life, I was a musician, so that was great. But I also got to participate in what is sort of generally referred to as the Silicon Alley phenomenon or movement or whatever, you know. So I got to experience a lot of startup and tech growth in New York while I was there, which was very cool. What was your other question? My background.
So, what you do right now?
Sure. So, these days, I'm a full-time WordPress developer, both working on client sites and client work, and then or contract work, and then developing plugins nights and weekends.
Okay, awesome. So let's go into that a little bit of background right now. I think that's a good place to start. So, just to give me some frame of reference. What year did you finish high school? Just so that I have an idea of timeline.
Sure. 1994.
Okay. So very close to me. I was 95. So based on that and based on where you are currently and looking at your history, can you remember the first time that you started using WordPress? Can you tell us a little bit about that story?
I don't have the exact date or anything like that, but I remember the time period because... starting in college, I really started pursuing a career or at least a second career in music, and all of my friends were musicians and this internet thing was new. And late 90s, somebody showed me how to start making websites and I just immediately fell in love. And so by the late 90s, I was making websites for all of my friends who were musicians because this was kind of a way that I could give back. And back then, there was this thing called Blogger, which was you'd sign into, you know, early days of SaaS, basically, you'd sign into a web application and make changes that would then get FTP'd to your website. And I mean, it was brilliant because it saved me from the endless, like, could you change this letter, you know, on these 9 pages to going, you do it yourself. I don't want to do this for you anymore. I built the website. Now you maintain it, you know, which was pretty great. And then for me personally, early 2000s, I want to say 2003, 2004, like so many other people, I heard about 37 Signals and Basecamp and this thing called SaaS and was on the early, you know, Joel on software forums. And so I had a real journey starting then from combining entrepreneurship and SaaS apps and technology. And so my first SaaS, I think like a lot of developers, was a CMS. And I tried to build that out for a few years and I got a few customers. But it's amazing if you build it, but you don't market it at all, you don't get any customers. I don't know why. That's sarcasm. I gave up the CMS, but I still was maintaining my own website and various project sites and sites for friends of mine. But kind of the same problem applied, where I did not want to be maintaining these websites after I built them. So eventually I was again looking around for various CMSs. I think I built at least a couple more, just little PHP scripts or whatever. And then 2009, I want to say, was really when I think I'd tried, or I remember trying the, you know, quote unquote famous 5-minute install, and it never worked. Part of the problem was, from early on, I had taught myself ASP Classic. Keep in mind, I started, you know, programming in like 2001. So I'm old. So there's an old programming language, right? So WordPress would not work on a Windows server. Well, it still kind of doesn't, but, or shouldn't is the better way to put it. So anyway, yeah, somewhere in the late 2000s, I learned PHP, switched servers, or server architecture. Suddenly WordPress worked and worked really well. And it was basically all uphill from there. I took many years to really start combining WordPress with product development, which is kind of why I evangelize it so much now. But for years, it just served as the platform for my own music website and various other, you know, for the marketing websites that I'd build for clients or things like that.
Interesting stuff. And in terms of your development, did you have any sort of formal programming or development education, or is everything self-taught?
Yeah, everything was self-taught. I mean, because I started, you know, the kid across the hall on the second day of college, took me to the computer center and said, "Have you seen this internet thing?" And up till then, my experience with, I'd had almost no experience with connecting to other people over wires, digitally. Obviously, I talked on the telephone. But he showed me, you know, here's web pages for your favorite bands, here's web pages for all this stuff. And I was immediately hooked. It was really cool. In high school, we had these CD sets or DVD, no, it must have been CDs still, an encyclopedia on a CD. And that was amazing. And it had links, you know, so you would click on somebody's name and it would take you through to their article. It was really cool. It had to have been built on HTML, but I had no idea. And then there was no getting online. And I did have, thinking back, I had a little experience with Moose and MUDs and you know, some of that stuff, I just didn't connect the dots because I was always a nerd. I had a Commodore 64, you know, in elementary school, and learned enough basic to make a rocket ship shoot off the screen and stuff like that. I was always fascinated, and totally. It is still 8:30, so yes, I have lots of energy, but my mind tends to wander. What was the question again?
That's fine. No, that's fine. Tangents are always welcome. It's funny you mentioned Commodore 64. I still remember my first Commodore 64 with the tape drive and sticking it in, pressing play, waiting for things to load. Good times. Yeah. It's interesting. I always find it interesting when I talk to other people who are a similar age group to me. So you and I are about a year apart. I think you're about a year older than me. And if we look at, you know, when we were growing up and finishing high school and moving on to college and those kind of things, you know, the internet only really started becoming what really was sort of developed as a thing in around 94, 95. And there was a number of years, I remember, I think my first or second year out of high school, you know, it was the big deal to have a 14.4 modem, you know, and be able right. to sit and connect and waiting for images to download and all that kind of thing. How do you think that your, if you look back at the last, what is it now? Quick calculation, 20 years. Yeah. Wow. If you look back at the last 20 odd years, how do you, and this is a kind of a two-part question. So if you forget the second part, I'll remind you, but well, let's start with the first part. How do you think your career would have been different had you finished high school, say 5 years later at around 2001, versus when you did?
Yeah, it's a good question. I've actually thought about that a little bit, just because the first few years of the internet and where I was in college in an age of experimentation, and I'm not trying to imply anything there, but the internet was so experimental. And we would sign into this thing called Pine, which was terminal based, to deal with email. When I saw my first, you know, interface for email, it blew my mind. I remember that, you know, just, you know, all of this to give context. So I remember going over to the computer lab often and just signing into the internet and finding random links, or there were inevitably you would have to sort of remember where you left off and you'd start, you know, but there really was an end to the internet, and there were whatever they were called, basically the click circles, and so, you know, these little self-inflicted networks, and so you're like, well, if you like this band, then you could click through this other band's website and dig a little deeper. There was also, it was the early days of shareware. And so you would go on these websites that had endless free little apps that people would create, you know, and I was not connected at home until I was in the late 90s. And so I would bring in floppy disks and fill them up with these little apps. And all of this course coincided with, again, suddenly I have communication with friends at other universities who are also discovering this thing. And so going, oh, have you checked out this thing? Have you checked out this thing? It was the first time I really got on to a lot of the different like news groups. And so you would subscribe and unsubscribe to these different news groups based around bands or genres of music or whatever you were into. And people would recommend different things. And then I remember... a friend of mine sent me a link to, he was an artist and was one of the first real waves, at least in my context or my understanding, of like truly digital, you know, almost everything he learned was on the computer. And, you know, in more and more involving, you know, things on the internet or publishing for the web and stuff like that. And he was at art school, but he's learning all this awesome digital stuff. And it sort of inspired me because I was always an artist as well, creative type. And so I'm trying to apply my music and everything I'm learning about music and music production. And again, that's kind of the experimentation that I'm referring to. I was taking these ideas of, you know, what can you do with sound and manipulation, but all on the computer, and going, well, here's this internet thing that's a blank canvas, but you put it out there. And back then, if you built it, people did find it, which was kind of amazing. And so I remember this friend of mine sending me to hell.com. Somebody had hell.com. Sorry, I just blew your explicit rating. But hell.com back then, I have no idea who was behind it. I'm sure it's written up somewhere. But it was some, you know, jokester/digital artist who would create these little online installations that would change once a month or something, but would really mess with you and really mess with your browser in a way that like we don't think about now. So, you know, now we are actually very used to, and you'd think it would have gone in the other direction, but we are very used to a website that is a grid and that is very constrained by the browser. You know, and us nerds will open lots of tabs, but it's very contained, you know, because of ad blockers, because of pop-up blockers. The installation I remember from hell.com was you would click a button and excuse me, it would open using JavaScript, which I hadn't even heard of at the time, would open a window that would open 10 windows that would open 10 windows that would open 10 windows and would very intentionally crash your browser, if not your computer. And that, but doing it in the name of, you know, basically art installation or pushing the medium. I have some of my early websites and they are weird. Like, cause I was really testing the like, oh, if you hide, you know, a frame here, like floating in the middle of the page, you could scroll sideways. And I would, you know, I was just learning Photoshop. So I didn't know, you know, what you weren't quote unquote supposed to not do. That's no quote. Nobody ever said that quote, but I would, you know, just mess around with filters and make weird images and then figure out how to splice them. And all back then using the Mozilla browser built in had a little web page builder. And I would just spend hours and hours and hours manipulating pixel by pixel. You know, and a friend who was 3 months ahead of me showed me, you know, how you do table-based layouts, which of course just blew all of our minds because suddenly you could do really interesting things. But anyway, yeah. So, your question about if it had been 5 years later, by then, things were already calming down, you know? And so there were still a lot of people doing a lot of interesting things. CSS wasn't a thing yet, but, already, I think more and more it was, you know, turning commercial. And maybe that was just my experience. I was also growing up and I got my first day job and all that kind of stuff. But it was reaching a new level of sophistication and intent. So yeah, I mean, 5 years, given the speed, I mean, we all know that, right? You know, even any five-year period of the internet has been has introduced huge changes. So, yeah, 5 years would make all the difference.
Yeah. It's funny you talk about that. Somebody somewhere in my Twitter feed the other day, retweeted, I think it was a designer or a front-end developer's tweet about, remember when we were young and we used to do fun things and the internet was supposed to be fun.
I saw that too.
I think it was make the internet shit again or something like that. And it was this brilliant page of, you know, the scrolling marquees and pixelated images. Yep. And animating, and it just kind of reminded you about the fun that we used to have back then. And we didn't care about the rules because there were no rules. Right. So you just did whatever, and if you wanted to have something, you know, whirling around and whatever, you just did it. And it looked amazing. It's true. What you said. It's become
recently, you know, sorry, go ahead.
No, you go.
I recently applied accident. I was trying to make a little, loading spinner. So CSS rotation on an icon, and I accidentally put it on the div around it, which was, you know, block level. So suddenly half the screen was spinning wildly. And I actually had that moment of like, I started giggling and I was like, I remember when stuff like that was, you know, like we would do that. And I thought, yeah. I did take a minute and I was like, I'm building it in the context of a very professional app. But I like to think I've got a pretty terrible sense of humor. I love my dad jokes and such. And even before we started working on the new version of the app, we were already talking about what kind of April Fool's jokes we could introduce. Easter eggs, that kind of thing. And immediately I started thinking it like, okay, there's got to be some context in which I can there click a button and the whole thing spins around wildly, you know, maybe just once, but just, it's like those, this has to be more than 10 years ago now, but when Google introduced a few little Easter eggs, right? If you Google barrel roll, and there were a few others, but I was We used to have so much fun, you know.
Yeah, we've lost some of that fun.
When we all had time and energy and fewer dogs.
No, you're absolutely right. I think we could all do with a lot more fun. So that's why it's always nice to see tweets like that, and it kind of reminds you.
And so here's one more thing. I even in college, thinking about like hell.com and there must have been other things that inspired me, but it's kind of amazing to think back my trajectory and then how I kind of lost steam. But before I graduated college, so 98, 99, I know what it was. So a friend of mine at the time, phenomenal musician. Well, he's still a phenomenal musician. He's just not really a friend anymore. But he was trying to pursue a music career, as was I. And we were sending off demos and getting no attention. And like everybody else, we were like, let's start a label, which at that point was kind of awesome because it meant you create a web page, call yourself a record label, and then you were a record label. Because it's amazing to think about also the trajectory of digital music distribution, but there was this thing called mp3.com that early, you know, where you could buy MP3s. It was really cool and distribute MP3s. But anyway, we were, again, kind of had a sense of humor. So we started this little record label, quote unquote, but we were like, well, we need a roster to make this look official. So on a given Saturday, you know, we would take a couple of hours, record a couple of songs in a given genre. I would create a landing page for these imaginary bands or artists, you know, download a random photo off the internet. We wrote this really awful Oasis ripoff. I don't remember what it was called. So we had our like British, you know, Britpop band, cause that was big at the time. The one I remember the most was Tamra Sweeney, the most goth girl in the world. Like that was her tagline, Tamra Sweeney, the most goth girl in the world. And I actually downloaded an adult photo, but of a woman who had a shirt on, and I cropped it so she looked dressed, but in a, you know, black little something. So and made the photo black and white, and then that was Tamra Sweeney. Like she, you know, big hair, and in black and white, looked kind of goth, you know. And I might have even photoshopped on some mascara or something. I mean, just, and this was the kind of stuff you could do, right? And so we had this fake record label. Fast forward, just because it's funny, to 5 years later, I'm in New York City. I'm actively pursuing a music career. This record label is pretty much long since been forgotten, but is still online. I actually got an email from one of the venues that I had desperately been trying to get booked at, saying, we randomly found your record label. Do you guys want to have a label night at our club? So I wrote back and I was like, well, most of our roster has moved on, but I would love to play. And that was actually how I got booked and booked a couple of my friends' bands, pretending that they were now on the label, you know. But anyway, so that's wow. What came out of it. You could just build websites. This is awesome. This is still like late 90s. So I built, I had done a year abroad, with, Youth for Understanding. And so I built a website called, AYM, Angry Young Men. And it was a study abroad program, but for like angsty teenage boys. And it would basically send them, you could be sent into a military zone and kind of like, you can't do this now with ISIS recruiting and all sorts of crazy stuff, right? But in 98, you could still, so I put up this website that, you know, I mean, a little very, I mean, as a grown up now, very questionable, but like at the time I thought this was hilarious, you know? And then what was amazing was I then moved to New York City, no connection to any of this stuff. I am applying for grown up jobs, and I'd also freelanced. And so I'd built a number of websites for small businesses. And those were the things I was sending around. And I guess I sent around one or two of these like artsy installation concept pieces. And eventually the first job I got was because of those. The guy who hired me, head of the web presence at a major university, hired me not because of my experience building corporate websites, but because he too was an artist. And it turns out that he was actually building a name for himself. He was a phenomenal artist, Virgil Wong. Go look him up. Some of his stuff is still online, but he wound up getting quite well known because he was this unbelievable graphic artist and would create these very real looking websites at the time. Because at the time, if you had a website, you were real, right? And so he created a fake hospital, and within the context of the fake hospital, these fake website, also again, like online pranks as art concept pieces. One was called malepregnancy.com, and he filmed a friend of his, like basically pretending to be pregnant. And he was on talk shows. Like, he got thousands and thousands of hate letters. Like, this goes against God and all this stuff. Like, people missed the joke. But it was such an immaculate, beautiful website. Another one was, I don't remember the name of it, but you could biogenetically engineer a child online. So you would hold your, this is, keep in mind, this is 20 years before touchscreens, not quite 15 years before touchscreens. It would say, okay, hold your thumb up to the screen. We will scan your thumb. We will predict these diseases. And then he had found a little service that would email you once a month. Again, 15 years before drip campaigns, would email you once a month with updates from your surrogate mother. He took these jokes so far. So it was a pleasure. It was a pleasure to work with this guy because... Again, and this was, you know, he did this in the context of art and pushing boundaries, you know, and what he accomplished with it was amazing. Like, he wound up doing art shows all over the world and being on talk shows and all this kind of stuff, just kind of pushing these boundaries. But also it was all artistic and conceptual, and I mean, just brilliant.
Amazing. Amazing. You sound like you've got some really interesting stories to tell. I wish I had more than an hour with you.
Yeah, we haven't even gotten to the topic at hand.
Exactly. And that's fine. There's a bunch of things we can skip over. So what I'd like to do then is talk about the point in your journey where, because you've mentioned now about, you know, having jobs and working for people, what was the point, or what was the catalyst for you to go from being someone who was employed to being someone who you would consider fully self-employed?
Sure. So I'd always freelanced. As you can gather from what I've said, probably I've always had a penchant for doing my own thing and working on my own projects, sometimes in the context of a day job, sometimes not. And so I was always freelancing, moonlighting, building my own little projects, building projects for other people, learning. And that was really, cause I learned by doing. And, for me, pushing my own ideas and then the tech is incidental, and that makes it almost more fun. And makes me, specifically skilled at solving problems, because for me, I was like, I have this idea. I need to get it online. I have no idea how to get it there. I'd figure it out, you know, and it might be awful. The execution might be awful, ugly code, or, you know, hacking together scripts or whatever it was, but I'd get it done. Eventually in 2008, thanks to the crash and recession and everything else that happened there, got laid off from, one of my last full-time corporate go into the office jobs. And by then it was an agency, and they were great people and taught me a lot, but I didn't love the work I was doing. And so at that point I was getting more and more interested in startups and building my own in particular, but obviously I wasn't quite there yet. So wound up working as a full-time contractor for a little agency, trying to build product, kind of, you know, being very scrappy. And that was where the lines really blurred for me, because before that it was, you freelance, you have some projects, you chip away at them at nights and weekends, or, you know, if I had my days, I'd work on them during the days, to like, oh, there's this thing in the middle that's contract, where you're not an employee, you're technically your own boss, but you're working for somebody else. And then over a few years, I went back and forth between trying to juggle lots of clients, which I was terrible at, sales, which I was technically good at, but could never really formalize the process, and for the last few years, I've pretty much always worked for a single agency, company, whatever, startup, but as a contractor. So my hours are kind of flexible. And for me, it gives me a sense of self-control. I'm a great contractor. I'm a terrible employee, even though a lot of the time they look very similar. But it gives me a sense of like, I choose to be here. And, if there are times or there's time that I want to take off, I can take it off. And which coincides nicely with building product on the side, because a lot of the better companies that I've worked for understand that that's why I'm good at what I do, not, you know, and want me to keep pursuing side projects, not shut them down or, you know, focus too much on them or whatever. And I'm always very honest with whoever I work with up front, so that when there's like a big launch or, you know, something, if there's a big bug or something, it's like, sorry, I need to take a couple of hours or what have you. And I've already sort of established that relationship. And subsequently, because of that, I've had few problems.
Absolutely. That sounds really, really good. So if you search Corey on the internet, you'll find the two sort of main websites of Gelform, which I would say is probably your consultancy or your Correct. Sort of freelance personage, if you will, online, your freelance brand. And then the main product that you are sort of known for would be the Kanban for WordPress plugin. So what I wanted to start by asking you is, at this point in time, if you had to look at the amount of time that you're spending on consultancy / client work, contract work, versus the amount of time that you're spending on plugin development, product development, what is that percentage balance right now?
In a normal work week, it's about 60-40 client work. But then when you factor in nights and weekends, it's probably 80-20 going the other way. Just because it's, client work is fun and interesting, and I like working with a team, because I'm remote and I've been remote for many years. It's nice to know that there are other people out there still, and be forced to talk to them for a 15-minute scrum every day. I almost now look at it in reverse, where a lot of the client stuff is actually where I do learning, because it's new and different. And I don't get to make the choices always about what tools to use and stuff like that. And again, that's kind of where you learn. But again, it's my passion projects that I, when it's 5 o'clock, I might stop and make dinner and try to hang out and be a good husband. But inevitably my brain is thinking about Kanban again. So there might be another hour or two snuck in. And then for me, the really nice balance that I have found, or habit that I've developed, it's not really a habit, pattern, whatever, is I don't really produce music anymore, but I still love it. And there are a handful of, so I used to produce dance music. But I love lots of different kinds of musics. But I especially love music curation. So I was also a DJ, but I loved following certain DJs and then also DJ even now, meaning like, somebody who just presents a couple of hours of music, in a true sense of curation. And so there are a number of radio shows that I love listening to. By the way, we are missing one of them right now. So I just want you to appreciate the sacrifice that I'm making here.
I do.
but there are a number of, programs throughout the week that happen regularly with the DJ or the person curating the music, that I love to like tune into. And I will often take those and say, okay, while I'm listening to this 2-hour program, which is like, cookies or, you know, something sweet to me. Let me work on Kanban because that's also fun and a passion project. And so like there's one in particular on Saturday mornings that I love. And so for 2 hours, you know, I'll put on my headphones. My wife's drinking her cup of coffee and reading the paper or whatever. And so I, you know, put on my headphones, listen to my favorite music, learn a little bit about music history, work on Kanban. And it just, it's the best way to start the weekend, you know?
Awesome.
And I also usually feel really good for the rest of the weekend, even if I don't get to work on my own projects because I need to mow the lawn and to, you know, participate in real life. It's, you know, I already feel like I accomplished something and, you know, got something done. So it's a nice sort of, again, I'm not sure what you call it, technique or pattern or whatever, but it's something that I try to do regularly.
No, that's great. And I mean, you know, that's the great thing about having these discussions with different people is you learn these different patterns and these different ways of doing things. And it then gives you some ideas of how you can build your own. So I want to move on then to the Kanban for WordPress plugin, mainly because you reached out to me because you were talking about the fact that you're busy rewriting it. And I want to dig into that in a second. But what I want to find out from you now is what was the reason that Kanban has become sort of the primary product that you're focusing on? Was it something that you chose to focus on, or did it become a popular product and therefore that's where the focus went? And how did the idea come about?
Sure. I absolutely chose to focus, to double down on it. So as I've described some of my trajectory, I've been pursuing building businesses off of SaaS apps since early 2000s. And have launched dozens and dozens of apps, too many apps, which is great for learning development. But I often wound up pursuing shiny objects or just giving up too soon because one of my major flaws is I have this artistic sensibility, and an artist puts painting on a canvas or, you know, creates an audio experience or whatever it is. And as long as they are true to themselves, it may or may not resonate with people, but you know, the success of it is measured by them being true to themselves, which is exactly the opposite of business, which is all about being true to your customers. And so I really struggled for a long time with building products and just not understanding why nobody wanted them. I wanted it. I thought it was brilliant. Nobody cared, you know. In 2000 something, late 2000s, 2010-ish maybe, I built a little app, a financial tracking app, in a weekend. And it blew up almost overnight. And it was one of my first real successes. Never made any money, but got the real boon was I submitted it to Lifehacker pretty early on when Lifehacker was just coming up. And so they would still read emails if you sent them one, and they didn't tell me. But 6 weeks after I launched, and so thankfully I had 6 weeks to improve the product, I suddenly was written up on Lifehacker, and I was still getting individual emails every time somebody signed up. And so I'm walking back from a meeting and my phone just starts blowing up. And by the time I got back to the office, I had, you know, 400 emails or something, and it wasn't a long walk. So over time, and over a few years, I focused on this product, which was also one of the first times that I was ever able to really do that. But I could never figure out how to make money off of it. So eventually I sold it. But it kind of shifted my mentality of, yes, the right product pursued over a duration of time, you know, might or might not result in something. I mean, it's all a crapshoot, right? But, you know, but I really need to start giving these things time. right around the time that I sold it, about a year after, back in, this is 2000, let's see, 6 years ago, 5 years ago. So 2013, so I must have built it in 2009. I don't know. This timeline's all screwed up. Doesn't matter. But I started looking for my next product. I knew there was, you know, there would be a next thing. And I built a bunch of little apps, again, just because it was, most of them because they were fun. But at that point, I had no expectations, and I was building them for me, and it was really just to learn. And I was okay with all that. I was more okay with it than I'd been in a long time. And then I started realizing that WordPress was really, you know, I was seeing the hockey stick and realizing more and more that WordPress was a viable platform to build apps on top of. Because up till that point, I had seen, you know, I'd seen Code Canyon and other marketplaces, and you'd spend a, you know, maybe a few $100, but I was like, that's not a business. You can't, you know, you'd need to go an inch deep and a mile wide, and I don't want to maintain 1,000 plugins. Because I'm a product guy. I love building a product, focusing on a product. And so I went to WordCamp Atlanta. I met a few people who were successfully running product businesses off of WordPress, kind of went, aha, and really started looking for, okay, what's an opportunity to build a robust product on WordPress? And 6 months later, I realized, well, working for a startup that needed a project management tool, something simple like Trello, but Trello wouldn't work for us, but we didn't want to pay through the nose for Jira or, you know, any of the other ones. I was like, wait, like what can we self-host on WordPress, quick install? And despite there already being 50,000 plugins, there was no Kanban board. And I was like, oh, this actually makes a lot of sense. Like, I want to self-host it. I want it built into, for me, it's a vision that I think is starting to grow, nothing to do with me, but I'm seeing more and more people talk about it. Is that looking, is treating WordPress as a command center. And so, instead of it being your marketing blog and then you sign into lots of other apps, there's more and more opportunity to, yes, and use it as a blog and use it as a marketing channel, but to also basically self-host all of these apps. So it ends up being cheaper. It also ends up being offering more control, more customization. And then now we're actually seeing a lot of people talking about, with GDPR coming up, like, oh, if I self-host this, then I don't have to worry about as many privacy issues. I mean, sometimes more, it kind of depends on how you're using it, obviously, but you know, but there's just a lot of advantages that I'm seeing, and we kind of fell into that. So anyway, so that's where the idea came from, was a need for a Kanban board and not finding one in the WordPress plugin repo and going, oh, here's an opportunity. And I'm also a productivity nerd. And so Kanban as a concept, as a method, just kind of appeals to me. And so all of these things came together. So I quick bashed out an MVP over a couple of months just to get it in the repo as fast as I could. And have basically been building on it ever since.
Awesome. And do you remember roughly when it was added to the repo? Roughly how many years ago?
January. 2-3 years ago. It would be January. So it would be 2.5 years ago.
2.5 years ago. Okay, great. And it's currently on version 2.5, but I also know, and this is, so the first question I want to ask you is how scary is it to have a specific date on your website for when version 3 is coming out? You are a very brave man.
Oh, terrifying. Terrifying.
And what was the decision behind making that the date?
Counting backwards. So okay. I have a marketing guy who I work with, who, you know, he basically puts in some time on the side, really nights and weekends, who helps me with marketing. And basically, you know, someday we will, we're hoping to grow this into, you know, a full-time business. But he kept putting me on the spot as I started rewriting this back in December of, you know, we need a date because we want to do, and I was on board. I wanted to do, I've always been, as I've described, a just, you know, soft launch kind of guy. And, reading more and more about marketing, it really helps to have a date and have, you know, a launch campaign and really build up to this, because then you can take advantage of certain momentum and scarcity and all sorts of stuff. Excuse me. So he kept asking me, like, when are we launching? You know, when's a date? And not trying to pressure me, but just encouraging me to keep it in mind. And I kept going, you know, when it's done, and kind of thinking that we would soft launch anyway, but then we would plan a launch afterwards or whatever. And there was a point, I don't know, a month, probably 2 months ago now, where I finally was able to break down everything that I was working on and kind of, you know, put it all on a map and realized that we more or less had a date. And so I added a month, just because I know what happens, and sure enough, we are a few weeks behind where we want to be, but we're still okay, I think. And said, yeah, let's pick a date. And I'm going to a wedding, at the end of June. So we said, well, so we'll launch the week we come back. And we have a marketing consultant that we work with who's like, well, you always want to launch on a Thursday. And we were like, okay, so what's the first Thursday? And I just kind of got talked into it, you know, or passive aggressively backed into it or whatever you want to, however you want to describe it. But yeah, I honestly like it. I mean, it's terrifying. We may very well miss it by a week, or we'll ship without a couple of features. But it's kicking my ass in a really nice way. You know, I've got it in mind. This is my product and my company. So I can change my mind. So I do have a little wiggle room. But I also like that we've got a date that we then counted backwards from, and so said, okay, here are all the things, marketing activities that we want to do, and also some dev activities like when to release to beta testers and that kind of thing, building up to that date, you know, and so I'm mostly enjoying it, but yes, it is, as a developer, it is terrifying.
I can only imagine. So let's talk about this rewrite that's happening. And as I understand it, you're doing a full rewrite. Is that correct?
Gulp. Yes.
Yes. Okay. So my first question then is why?
So I started this 2.5 years ago, to solve the problem of project management, and very naively didn't think, or didn't do as much research as I should have, because as I've described, I am a build it and see kind of person. So I built an MVP based on project management and put it out there, and almost immediately started seeing other use cases. And in, you know, Trello really changed the market for the Kanban method. There were plenty of other SaaS apps out there, and there are many more now. But Trello, who is very careful never to use the word Kanban, had Joel Spolsky and Fog Creek behind it. Sorry, my phone is ringing. Shush. And anyway, so Trello has really changed the way a lot of the world looks at Kanban. And it is this awesome, simple method. It is one step above a to-do list. And so everybody can understand it in a minute or two. And so immediately I started seeing a lot of people going, oh, this is great. This is, you know, I get to self-host my own, you know, Trello type of thing. But I use Trello for sales tracking. I use Trello for dot, dot, dot. And I just kept kind of, you know, duct tape and super glue, modifying the original app that I'd built. Fast forward, you know, 2 years, and I got to a point where it couldn't do what I needed it to do anymore. Mm-hmm. And I, as a product guy and wanting to meet product market fit, and seeing the potential for where the product could go, but knowing that I couldn't get it there gradually, I said, okay, I've got to bite the bullet. This is one of those worst case scenarios. There's no good option. But I just couldn't see taking, well, there's more to the story, right? But a year ago, I couldn't see taking a year or two to slowly morph it into what I saw it becoming. And then I basically got frozen in place for 6 months out of, fear, insecurity, not invented here syndrome, shiny object syndrome. What's the other good one that everybody talks about? Help me out here. Where you're convinced that your code's not good enough?
Imposter syndrome.
And also, it was, you know, really the time. It was when the whole like React license gate happened.
Okay.
And so I said, if I'm going to do this right from a tech standpoint, I should rewrite this in React, which also led me to, okay, well now I've got to learn React. And so I started to, which was great. And I still look forward to using it someday. But this, the 20-year developer in me, just, I had this sinking feeling where I'm like, this is the right thing to use, but can I really, you know, I've got, thousands of active users. Can I really release this stably to these thousands of users who are going to rely on this product when I don't know this technology that is a very robust technology? It's not a little library. It's in a completely different way of doing things. And so I for all of these things or reasons, I just froze. And for months, it should be in React. I don't know React. Learn React. I don't trust this. I don't trust myself, but it's got to be in React. And I just, just got stuck for months. And it was really, really tough because I saw the potential. And of course, that's when you really start seeing, you know, you're running a race and you're doing fine and you're listening to your music and whatnot. But as soon as you start to fail, you become very, very aware of all of the people around you running by you, and it starts to feel worse. I had a really tough few months last fall, all based around, doing this rewrite. But the truth is I never, the one thing I never questioned was doing the rewrite. Because I saw where the product needed to go, and I couldn't do it without starting over.
I can only imagine that you also, I mean, I know for myself, if I was in a situation where I had a product that had been running for, say, 2 years, and now I've realized that it does need to be rewritten, and now is the time to do it because you don't want to get, 10 years down the line and then have to rewrite it.
Exactly.
It must have been a very hard decision to make, because now while you're rewriting the software, well, what happens to customer support and fixing current bugs and all that kind of thing? I can only imagine that mentally you went through a lot of anguish as well around all of this.
Yeah.
And I know you mentioned before we started this podcast, you're actually doing a talk about, I think, mental health and that kind of thing. So let's dig into that a little bit. What was it like sort of for you mentally and emotionally kind of dealing with all of these problems, specifically when you are a, for want of a better word, single founder, kind of working on your own remotely, not in a team that you can lean on?
Right. So, the little plug, the talk that I'm doing is at WordCamp Belfast in 2 weeks, doing a lightning talk on a lot of digging in a little bit more on into a lot of the all these different syndromes and things that I experienced, and just trying to address them, in part because it's Mental Health Month, and so it's on the top of a lot of people's minds, but also, you know, I know a lot of us go through this at various points. I still do. I have many times, you know, over the years. You know, kind of just sharing my experience anyway. There are a few things that I've done to help myself. One, I do go to therapy every week, and have on and off for years, and have always found that very helpful. I love psychology anyway. I'm a dev. I love solving problems. I love digging into problems. And so all of these things that go on in our heads, you know, fascinate me, and all of the experiences that we've had that build up to make these problems in our heads, fascinate me, and untangling those and figuring them out and, you know, trying to apply order and logic to them, and then different people's approaches and ways to think about thinking and feeling. I just love it all. So I get a lot out of therapy. I think sometimes I drive my therapist crazy because I will try to speak psychology instead of just being the patient, but that's half the fun for me, you know? So anyway, therapy is great. Highly recommended. It doesn't have to be a lay on a couch and tell me about your mother. A lot of people that I know combine therapy with basically career coaching. And so I find that often my therapy veers into that as well, which is fine. You know, sometimes you just need somebody to talk to very objectively, and it's great. The other thing that I've done for years on and off is mastermind groups. So for the people who don't know, a mastermind group is you find, you know, what would it be, 3 to 5, 5 to 8 other like-minded people who are generally pursuing the same goal. Often what I've experienced is you find a number of other solo founders, a number of other people running small businesses, and you do a call once a week, and there's a bunch of different formats, and I won't go into all that stuff, but because look it up, there's a great episode of Startups for the Rest of Us that breaks down more methods than I even knew existed. But the way I usually participate is everybody takes 15 minutes and just kind of talks through what they're struggling with, and everybody else tries to help, and specifically come back with suggestions based on their experience. And then whoever is talking, usually will try to prepare one or two questions. Hey, have you guys had any experience with this? And people again will try to weigh in. And then the piece that I find most valuable is accountability. So setting 3 very doable goals, not like, you know, eat breakfast, but like, you know, recently doing a marketing campaign, we were like, okay, we want to write, you know, a blog post a week over the next 6 months kind of thing. And that's, for somebody who doesn't write regularly, that's extremely intimidating. And so when I set a goal, it wasn't even write my first blog post. It was just come up with, you know, 3 ideas, not 10, not 100, 3 ideas for blog posts, you know, just because I can't fail, you know. But then the next week come back and sure enough, I'd come up with at least 3 ideas. So check, and I feel good. And I at least did something, you know. And there are weeks where I changed my mind, checking that item off isn't relevant anymore, and that's different. And there are weeks where I don't get something done, but the group's job is to then go, okay, so why, you know? And it's not so much a like, beat you over the head kind of thing, but just like, it makes you justify it. Make sure that you're thinking through stuff and you're not just doing or not doing certain things based on fear. So that's huge. That's huge. It does take work and diligence. Having a consistent call with four busy people is very tricky. And finding 3 to 5, however many other people who are willing to commit week over week. And then also making sure that you're very present. A few weeks ago, I found over a couple of weeks that I would like, it's time for the call. I'd quick sign in. Like I'd participate. And I was like, I'm not getting out of this. One, I'm not preparing my own thing. I'm not bringing up good questions. So I'm just not getting as much out of this as I could be if I took 4 minutes, to prepare. But I'm also not being a good team member. And so now I've swung back the other way. For me, just fun little aside, I set up a dartboard in my office. And so now I put on wireless headphones and I play darts well, listening and talking, so that I can't be Googling or skimming Twitter or whatever. I have to be present, or at least as present as I can be until I scream bullseye. But those are a couple of things. I have a wonderful, amazing relationship with my wife, where I'm brutally honest and thankfully have been since the beginning. So she now expects it and sometimes rolls her eyes at me. Very supportive, on board, but also a voice of reason. The obvious stuff that I fail at, just like everybody else fails at, but I try to keep top of mind of like, go walk a dog, get out of the house, step away from the computer, all that kind of stuff. And without going into the specifics of application, those are some of the things that I did to really like turn a corner. The one specific example I'll give to drive the point home is I was stuck. And week over week, I kept saying, I'm trying to learn React, but I got it. How do I move? Like, I just couldn't get out of my own way. And one of the guys in one of my mastermind groups said, so why React? He's a super blunt guy. I love him for it. So just why React? And I started to give my same canned answer. It's the right, the doorbell rang. It was the plumber. I couldn't not answer the door. Sorry guys, I gotta jump off. Why React? Why React? Why React? And I'm running through the answer that I would have given as I'm showing the plumber into the boiler room. And I'm like, why React? And it really like, I had one of those awesome, stupid moments where you're like, I'm a fool. Why didn't I just, but it was like, I didn't have the opportunity to give my canned answer. I finally got the kick in the ass that I needed to like, stop just giving my canned answer. And I started thinking about the problem differently, which was previously I was going, there are basically two columns. And I get into all this because I think this is valuable for other developers turned entrepreneurs, which the WordPress world is full of. I was thinking about my situation as basically two pillars, business and tech, which included the product. And the business doesn't care what programming language I use. Build a good product so that your customers are happy, so they'll give you money, so you can keep building a better product and onward and upward, right? And then I'm looking at this other thing going, the other pillar going, well, the product really needs to be rewritten. It needs to be rewritten to solve these certain problems, or React solves these certain problems. React is the answer. WordPress is shifting to React. React is the answer. And it was all kind of lumped together. And I just had this moment where suddenly there were three pillars, which was business, product, and tech. And the business doesn't care. The business doesn't even really care what the product is, right? As long as customers are happy. Product doesn't care what language I use, as long as it solves certain problems for the customers. And the customers using the product don't care whether it's Python or Node or Lisp or whatever. And then as long as I can meet their needs. And from tech, okay, yes, the problems are best solved, or at that moment it was clear that React solved those problems. But did I have to use React, or could I solve those problems using JavaScript and you know what I already knew? Yes. Oh my God. Wait a minute. I don't need to use React. And just had, you know, palm to forehead, if you hear me slapping myself in the forehead, going, oh my God, you know, all this time wasted, all this insecurity, all these bad feelings, you know, thankfully much of it dissipated, you know, in an afternoon. And I wrote my friend a very nice email saying, thank you, thank you, thank you for kicking my ass. Exactly, you know, because he knew what he was asking. I don't know that he arranged my plumber to show up at exactly the right moment, but it worked. Thank you, John. You know, but that was it. Behind all of this stuff, like asking about how you address all of these insecurities and all these negative feelings and all of these things that come up, you know, there are lots of techniques. Sometimes it just takes time. Right. And so I was working on it. I was never not thinking about it. I was driving myself even a little crazy about it. It took a few months for the right person to ask me the right question, to have my hot water heater start leaking, for the plumber to show up at exactly the right moment. You know, sometimes it just, it takes time. I've also had, other instances of this in my past where, so the app, the financial tracking app that I mentioned previously, there was, I reached a peak of thousands of active users. And I was only, I mean, you're only ever so much, so good of a developer, right? You know what you know. But back then there, even this was, you know, whatever I said, 5 years ago, the amount of tech that has improved in the last 5 years is unbelievable. So even at that point, 5 years ago, I was struggling, the servers were struggling, the infrastructure was struggling, and I could only do so much. And the whole thing just started falling over. And it's just the worst feeling. And solo founder, and at that point I did not have a therapist, and at that point I did not have a mastermind group. I thankfully was working in a co-working space, so I at least was going somewhere every day and surrounded by peers and would try to grab people and talk through the problems. With that, very slowly, Leaning Tower of Pisa, you know, kind of gradual falling over. And in that instance, there wasn't a moment of epiphany, but over, I don't know, weeks and months, very slowly righted it again. You know, but it was just chipping away at it every day. And what I alluded to earlier with the mastermind, and it setting very obtainable goals, it was like, what's one little thing that I know I can win today? And just very slowly writing the whole thing, you know, meaning it was going wrong and, you know, setting it straight again. Struggle. We all go through this stuff time to time. And last year, you know, those few months were pretty rough, but, got through them and then everything will go pear-shaped again in July when we launch, and there are major bugs, and it'll be a couple of months of insanity, but you know, we get through it.
Absolutely. I think what I love about that story is that, you know, you say about it takes time and sometimes it just works out the way it does. But if you look at the situation, you had made decisions to put certain things in place, like putting the mastermind in place and putting these other things in place. And for me, what I love about that story is just that ability to let someone else question what you're doing. The sort of lack of ego to allow someone to question what you're doing and actually listen to that question. I mean, I went through a situation probably about 6 months ago or so. There's a project that I'm working on quite actively with the founder of the business, and he and I have a very good relationship. And he's very non-technical, and I'm very non-foundry and non-marketing, and we kind of try and help each other. And there was a problem that I was working on, and I'm kind of, you know, you get into your zone and you're going deeper and deeper down the hole. And I was just struggling to get where I was going. And I was just having a random chat with him the one day and telling him about what's going on. And him not being a technical person, he just thinks about it from his sort of non-technical point of view. He says, well, have you tried this? And it was like this light bulb just went on a minute. Well, why didn't I think of that, you know? But it was because he doesn't have that bogged down sort of preconceived idea of how things should be. And like you say, with React, like I have to use React. No, you don't. You know, I was going down this role. I have to do this and I have to make this work. And he's like, well, have you tried something completely roundabout? Why didn't I think of that? So I think what you've done very well is you've put these things in place that allow you to have these experiences.
Thank you for listening. And please do check back in 2 weeks' time for part 2.